Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Mullet Cast, the podcast where business and pleasure collide. My name is Evan Balmer. Mike Mercia, our other co-host, is still on hiatus. He's traveling the country all over the place. Today we have two guests in the house. We have Jen Hampton. For those of you that didn't know her last name,
it's so true.
It's strictly because Facebook took down Juicy Jen and now she had to reveal her last name.
Dun dun dun.
Same goes for Porkchop, who's also in the house. So, I mean, you own a gallery. I think we could make him a fake ID. I think that should be submitted to. It's sort of
the
like
fake ID.
Yeah, totally. It's like McLovin, you know.
Yeah, I totally thought about it when they asked me to change my name. I was like, nah, I don't think, you know, I could totally botch this. Somehow get arrested.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, totally. It's worth a shot, though.
Yeah.
So, Jen, you are part owner and co-director and curator of the Parlor Gallery in Asbury. Mm-hmm. Check out parlor-gallery.com. On Instagram, you're at _JuicyJen, J-E-N-N.
Two N's.
And also check out the Wooden Walls Project, woodenwallsproject.com. Mm-hmm. Porkchop, check him out on Instagram at Porktomic, and theartofporkchop.com.
Yep.
Thank you guys for coming in. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having us, Evan.
Good day, super no problem. Cool. So let's go way back to the beginning. You wound up in Asbury. You were pursuing an acting career.
I right? was. Is it my weird, stupid bio online somewhere?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, dear God. that was my big plan. I was going to make movies and be an actress. Mm-hmm. And having an art gallery was my backup plan as a way to funnel all the money that I made. I always liked art. So I was like, I'm sure I'll have an art collection. And I'm sure I'll be successful as a filmmaker. And I'm sure I'll be an actress. So I'll have money and I'll buy all the art I want. And then I'll just share it with everybody. And that was sort of like in high school my plan.
Where'd you go to? Where'd you
I grew up in Western Pennsylvania in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Wow. It's funny. The other day I was walking around town and I kept seeing stickers of Groundhog Phil.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, where are all these stickers of Punxsutawney Phil coming, you know? But, and I said to my parents, like, it's so weird. There's these little round stickers of Punxsutawney Phil. My dad's like, I did that. No. People should know you're from Punxsutawney. And I was like, okay, Dad. So that was pretty exciting.
So, so your parents still live there?
They still live there in this beautiful old house. But it is, my parents are pretty progressive. So growing up there was like idyllic in a way where like there was no crime. And, you know, in fact, the only crime that ever happened was me. Someone stole my car. Oh, the only car theft in 26 years or
no
something.
Way.
Yeah, something stupid like that. But they have a beautiful house that I think that they were gifted from their parents when they got married. And so they've spent a whole lifetime fixing it up. But for me, growing up there was challenging because there was no diversity or culture. So my parents were cool enough that, like, on the weekends, they would take us to Pittsburgh, which was an hour and a half drive.
Okay.
But museums and stuff like that. And so that was pretty much my outlet to, you know, I didn't have MTV till I was 15, which is a strange thing for people that grow up in the tri-state area. I think they're like, wow. So you didn't, I didn't, like, so if I wanted to look at a band, I would have to find a magazine. We didn't have a magazine store, so I would have to go to, like, it was just wild. So I think, but part of my, like, imagination is, like, I didn't have anything to, like, sort of structure what I wanted to do from, so I just would dream about stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's funny, I think I was like 14 or 15 when I got MTV.
You did too?
Yeah. Because I remember it was like Van Halen on New Year's Eve of like 1984 or 85, and I was like, this
You're
is
like,
awesome.
Whoa, that's what, it is wild when you see, like, it's hard to even talk about that in the world that we live in, because everything doesn't exist unless it's on film or print or, you know, and Instagram. So, like, to think of, like, I love the band The Dead Milkmen, but I have no idea what they look like.
Right.
That's a strange concept, I think, now.
You're right. Yeah, that's true. Now, like, image is almost overtaken, like, the music in some ways.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah, like, I feel like I wonder what's going to happen in the world where everybody has to live on camera.
Right.
does like being a recluse like gonna be the jam? Like, I don't know what she looks like.
Right? Nobody's ever seen her.
That's right. Not sure if she exists.
Exactly, which might be a cool thing.
So you studied theater.
Oh yeah. And God, you really have my awful bio. Yeah. Yeah. I went to Indiana University of Pennsylvania for 2 years because that's all my friends went.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm gonna be a theater kid. And I was like, I started taking theater classes. I'm like, I am not a theater kid. Like,
right.
They're really over the top, and I don't know. It was just, like, not my thing. So I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll be a performance artist. And then I tried that, and I was like, oh, no.
Right.
This isn't for me either. So by the time I tried all the classes, paint, you know, printmaking and painting, I was like, school's stupid.
Right.
I'm out of here. So that was pretty much my college
and then
experience.
Where did you go to pursue? So how did you dabble in acting then? How did you try to get that going?
I basically was like, I think I can just move to town. Like, I took act everywhere I lived.
Uh-huh.
If I would, I was sort of like a traveling gypsy. I was like, where's my friends living? Let me go there. Like,
okay.
Oh, I'll go to Pittsburgh. Oh, where are you going now? I'll go there.
Right.
So I ended up in South Beach, Miami, of all places, because I read this article about how artists and architecture was sort of reinventing this town. And so I went there, and it was very akin to Asbury Park. There was like...
Right.
Cool old bodegas, and like it was so different than anything I had experienced being in Western Pennsylvania.
Right.
Like the sort of Haitian culture and the Latin culture and warmth. And so I was there for probably 4 years, and I was like, yeah, this is where I'm gonna make my break. And I was like, oh, after I got there, I was like, oh no, this is not how it works. You actually
right.
have to go to a city where there's casting agents. And so then I moved to New York, and I hated New York, which I think was more about, like, I don't have any money, and living in a city where there's so many things to do and buy, it was, like, just a frustrating thing to me. So then I just started pursuing taking acting classes.
Right.
And then that long story short, I was like, oh, you have to get an agent? That's bullshit. I can just tell them I have an agent.
Right.
And that only gets you to a certain point. And I could see myself being sort of typecast as, like, you know, stripper number two or waitress number three or a girl that breaks up marriage. And I was like, ugh. And so I ended up working for a casting agent. And it really shed light on the whole sort of way that the system works, which
right.
is basically categorized. Like, I would be 5'4", I would have blonde hair, I would have my, like, dress size and how big my boobs are. Like,
right.
it's so weird to be categorized physically for a job that's very emotional.
Right.
So I was like, you know what? I only wanted to get in film because of David Lynch and Tim Burton. This is probably not the route to go.
Gotcha.
Like, I feel like what really moves me about film is the art of film.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to make my own documentary. And then that, you know, I get these things and I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this and this is going to be it. And then
right.
it didn't happen because I didn't know about sound. I didn't realize, like, oh, you have to mic your subjects. So I interviewed 65 couples over a course of a year.
Right.
About the concept of love and how if it's a very conceptual thing, which would obviously not work for, like, a contemporary interesting documentary, which was basically the idea was if you were going to give – is the concept of love shared across the universe and what does it mean to you? And so – because I had – been working at a restaurant where people would come there to celebrate anniversaries and stuff, and I was like, this is such a weird look at this is our ritual, this
right.
is what people do, like, this day we did this, and you know, so long story short, that was like 2 years of my life where I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna do this project, but not like thinking into the like the baby steps.
Right.
I seem to be challenged by baby steps of
yeah.
how to do things. So then by default, a friend of ours was like, you should go to Asbury Park, it's pretty cool, because I was living in LBI at the time.
Okay.
Going into the city and auditioning.
That's a hike.
Yeah, but it was cheap to live in LBI in the off season.
Right.
I think I lived in a house where I was the only person on the street, me and my roommate, which was kind of great. Because you kind of like, you quarantine yourself. You're like, I'm not going to get distracted by anything. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to write and I'm going to figure it out. And this is going to be it. And
right.
so I would go to New York for inspiration. But you'd also have like no social life because it's LBI isn't in the winter. It's very desolate.
Right.
So someone's like, you should go to Asbury Park. And I was like, what's Asbury Park? And then that was just like, what is
right.
this? Well, how is this existing? Like, why are these cool buildings here? And there's no one here. Like, how is this possible? And
right.
then I think 2 years later, I moved here because of that.
That's cool. So what happened to the documentary?
I think it's sitting in the trunk of my car that is no, it's basically like 16 tapes that I'll probably never do anything with. But I guess it was the act of doing it.
Mm.
But I was like, oh, you know, this will just parlay into this documentary will parlay into a talk show, and then I'll have my own talk show. And then, you know, so they're all still there. It's all still like, oh, maybe I'll do that someday.
What'd you learn from the documentary? Do you remember?
Like, I learned that people have a really shallow idea of what love is.
Right.
It was a little challenging for me to think that. And I'm sure it's because, like, this weird waitress asked to interview me after dinner. I would wait till they would get a little drunk.
Right.
So maybe that wasn't good either.
So were you interviewing him at the restaurant?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really. So I didn't know a lot about lighting, obviously, and sound, which are the two probably most important things.
Right.
I think that if I was smarter and had a little bit more money, I would definitely have a crew that would do that, because I realized I was really good at the, like, interaction with the person and, like, that sort of aspect.
Right.
But when it came down to technical, I'm like, well, I don't understand why you can't hear me. And I was like, where did I put the – I thought if I just put the camera on a tripod.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
Very – but, I mean, I think sometimes in the process of creation, like, I had the same problem when I went to art school. I made art, but I never – showed it, because I didn't feel like that was the important part.
Gotcha.
So I think for me, it's always about the making part, and it's my challenge to figure out what to do after it's made.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Like I said, it's sitting in a bag somewhere.
That's cool. I mean, it might be worth re-exploring. I mean,
yeah, my new podcast, 21 Questions.
That's
Ming.
Right.
Ming.
So were you asking people 21 questions at that time?
Kind of, yeah. I love questions. I think that's how I learn, and I think that that's probably... You know, having no exposure to people and diversity growing up, I think that meeting all different new kinds of people is very exhilarating. Like, oh, where did you come from? What did you do?
Right.
I'm sure you share the same sort of.
Right. So did you, was it like a small town where basically you know everybody?
Yeah.
And
I graduated with 78 people.
Right. So you know
everybody
story.
I was, yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I was like, I'm never moving to a small town ever again. And then I'm like, oh, here I am in a small town that looks like a big town, but it's really just a small town.
It really is.
Yeah. And so, you know everything about everyone. And, you know, everyone dates so-and-so's sister and brother. I mean, they're very lovely people. It's just that, it just wasn't for me,
because
there was none of my tribe there, I guess.
So the part I didn't know about you, so once you got to Asbury, how'd you get involved in the Asbury Lanes?
So I guess it was just, I moved here because of it. So it was, I was sold this idea of, like, we're going to have this place where artists and musicians can have their own home, and you can do whatever you want, and you can curate art shows, and you can book shows. And I think that the person that started the Lanes was very much like... for lack of better words, like a politicker, like, you're going to have this.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
It's because he innately knew what everybody wanted. So there was like a group of 13 of us that were like, sold the stars and the moon. But, you know, the reality of a do-it-yourself venue is much different when you start to actually do it. Like, for the first year, you can do anything. But then after that, it was like, so I was like, this is great. Like, I can't imagine anywhere else in the world that someone would give you a vintage bowling alley and be like, go have fun.
Right.
You know, to a certain degree. I mean, we had some sort of structure, but not really.
There wasn't much. There wasn't much structure there at all.
Yeah, I guess not. Yeah. But like in a town where there was no one, like it's like having an empty canvas where you're like, there is no failure because there's no one watching.
Right.
So it's kind of cool.
Were you around Porkchop at that time also, around the Lanes?
Yeah, the dude Mel Stultz, whose idea it was, he was a good friend of mine at the time.
Right.
And before that, he had a bar called Odd Fellows.
Super cool.
Okay.
And he got me involved in that. And when that kind of was at its end, he was like, oh, well, we could maybe move into this bowling alley under the sky and we should throw shows there.
He's like one of those guys. Like, I know a guy.
Yeah.
Right.
So the next thing you know, we're ripping this guy's bowling alley.
It was
apart,
crazy.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That he's been in since he was 16 years old.
Yeah.
Really?
Never left. Like,
and he was in his, what, 50s, Ralph?
Yeah, it's funny. He seemed older, but he was probably like in his mid-50s.
Yeah, so we go
a
in there.
Bowling alley can age you prematurely.
Yeah. It was him and his mom. His mom was in her 70s, and I just remember going in there like, these people are going to let us do this? This is crazy.
Yeah, so We were in there walking around, and I was like, hey, this wall's got to go, and we rip up this floor, and just see Ralph's face, like, drop, like, you're going to do what to my bowling alley?
Right.
So we made all this wacky stuff, and just kind of changed it enough to make it look even more retro than it was.
Right.
But, you know, maybe a little less, you know, wood paneling, and, you know.
Right.
You know, brought it back to more like the 50s, early 60s looking.
That's cool.
Yeah. And that's kind of how it started. And it was more like, we need a place of our own where our own kind could come. And, you know, we could all hang out and do our own thing. And that's kind of how it was because there's nothing else around.
Right.
We essentially made a private club without trying to make it a private club. Like, we figured that the people that would be into what we're into would find us.
Right.
That's kind of the whole idea. It was like, eh, we'll just do what we like and then people will... They'll like it or they don't.
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah. So what is it, like, what are you most proud of from what you created there?
You know, it's interesting. Anytime that you have something like this that's created, it's so many energies that come together that you don't realize, like, if you take one of those people out, how would it would change the end product? I think what I'm most proud of is that for 11 years, sheer passion and will and force kept a place open,
right,
because we weren't funded.
There was no way that should have lasted as long as it did. You know,
right?
Yeah, because there was, you know, there was very little support.
Right.
You know, it was a bowling alley basically in the ghetto.
Right.
And a lot of people were still scared to come to Asbury.
Right.
So it wasn't like we just had people walking in off the street.
Right.
It was like people were like, yeah, this is a cool place, I'm coming back. You know, people come from Pennsylvania and
that's crazy.
All kinds of places.
Yeah, people would travel. I think it was just such a weird, like, I think it's I've said this a couple times and this is the best way I can describe it. There's like a scene in Porkchop's Heard That's 100 Times, but there's a scene in Willy Wonka where they're all in that elevator and everyone's freaking out, like, what are we doing, get me out of here. And then they open up and there's like there's the candy. That's like the lanes, because from the outside it looked like nothing and you're like, I'm not going in there, I'm not parking my car in front of there. So like I felt like if you were brave enough to get in, you felt like real proud, like, oh, I went to this really weird place. So it's like akin to like finding the secret spot that like no one knows about.
That's cool.
And so I think to take that sort of concept or that idea that what was happening and actually turn it into like a functioning, like John Waters is coming here to have a talk, like was like, oh my God, I can't believe John Waters is coming to our bowling alley.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, for me, it was still a bowling alley. And we did whatever we could to make it not feel like a bowling alley, but still have a bowling alley in it, because that was kind of cool too. But when we started to get sort of like people that, like, I made a list of all like of my favorite people that I would want to bring. And when people started saying yes to that, which was like a hard sell.
Yep.
Because we didn't have technology like other venues did. We didn't have I mean, our green room was like, oh, here you go.
At first, it was a closet.
Yeah.
It was an actual closet.
Was it really?
We put Dick Dale in a closet.
Wow.
And we're like, this is your green room, but look at this velvet painting of this naked woman. Isn't it beautiful? And he'd be like, okay, I'm going to sit in this room.
Yeah, we had Link Ray there, and he was with his wife and sitting basically in a closet.
It's crazy.
Already got to play. Yeah.
So, I mean, do you think about that stuff sometimes? Does it pop in your head and you're like, what the hell were we doing? Like,
it seems
how did
like,
we do it?
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things, and I'm not a parent, but I feel like it must be like parenting where you're just like, this is so intense. I can't believe I made this decision. Why am I doing this? But then when you look back, you're like, oh, it wasn't so bad, and look how cool they are, you know? So I feel like it must be like that because it's so intense every day. It was like Survivor every day. It was like, Oh my God, the electricity is getting shut off. What do I do? And then I'm like, I got to call someone and beg them not to turn it off because we have a show in like 3 days and I can get the money for it. Or like if the plumbing didn't work, I'd be like, who do we know who's a plumber?
The bathroom's backing up again.
So we learned how to use the barter system really well.
That's cool.
And that usually was in the form of tater tots, tickets, or beer.
Right.
Which is amazing that the barter system can work. Like, it absolutely can. Because I think people wanted to be a part of it. I started to notice, like, look at this random stranger picking up his own trash. That's crazy. Like, they're bringing bottles back to the bar. That's wild. Like, so I think that if you feel part of something bigger than yourself or cooler, like, I want to be, I don't know what this is, but I want to be part of it.
Right.
You're like, yeah, let's go. Let's do this. Like, I'll help in any way that I can. So we definitely got a lot of help, I would say. Like,
yeah, for
sure. Lot of people were like, how can we help you? Like, this is great. You should keep this going. And I mean, I think that probably year 8 or 9, I was like, we need to own this place. Like, this needs to be ours. So we made this idea that we were going to make 4th Avenue an entertainment district, and we were going to take over the Baronet, and it was going to be a cool indie theater, and we tried to find somebody to run that. But then we didn't realize with eminent domain. Like, I didn't know what that meant.
Right.
So all those years that I was like reaching out to people to try to help us buy it and develop it, like if someone would have just told me like, there's no way you can do this because it's lot by lot development, meaning that we would have to buy all of Fourth Avenue to just develop the bowling alley. Like it would have, I don't know if it would have saved me because there's so many cool things that have happened in those last 3 or 4 years,
right.
You know, but at the same time, it's like, that's when you're naive and ignorance is bliss, you're just like, go for it. Like, we can do this. So I think that like the thing that I'm most proud of is that like, I got a bunch of people that wouldn't necessarily be like, let's make this happen to make it happen, because they were a part of it was like its own little community.
That's
like
cool.
if you didn't do this thing, you let someone else down. And that was really cool, because it wasn't like I heard a critique the other day that someone went to the New Lanes and they were like, it's bizarre. They have this crazy diner that has this like full menu, and somehow your punk rock kid that worked behind it could make a better grilled cheese and tater tots. Like, why is that? And I'm like, because somebody really cared about making you a really good grilled cheese and a tater tot, because that meant at 10 o'clock they could shut down for 20 minutes to go mosh to their favorite band and come back and cook. It kept, the morale was there.
That's,
you know,
true.
And I think when something's just a job, you can feel it in every part of it. And I think that what kept the lanes open is you felt like it wasn't really a real business.
Right.
which was probably our downfall at the end of the day.
Yeah, right. Yeah, maybe there's like some perfect middle ground in there, right?
There's probably
like
a balance.
A little bit more business, but keep the vibe or something.
Yeah, it's funny. I got asked on Amy Quinn's podcast, like, what's the saddest part? And I said it's what it's become to me is the saddest part, because I felt like what it was this cool like microcosm of community and like what you can do on sheer will to like super funded and not that.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, everything that I learned personally through this catalyst of Asbury Lanes through the guise of a bowling alley has sort of shaped me and I think other people.
Right.
But now it's just a job to someone. That's just surreal to me.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's almost like it's, you know, like it's, I don't know, for me it's like, it's kind of cool that it's still there,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So at least it didn't get torn down, which would have sucked.
Yeah.
You know, but you're right, that's what it is. It's almost like a Funtime America version of what it was or something.
Yeah, so a lot of people compare it to when, what is it, Bill and Ted, or no, not Bill and Ted, the party guys, Wayne and Garth, got their radio show, and then like the corporate people come in and they're like, oh, what is this?
Totally.
So it's like, I question, like, I should have fought harder for it, I should have done more, but like, it's just, it's sad to the reality of being in a situation was so idealist, like it was so idyllic, and like you learn to work on the barter system because you have no money, and then with the influx of money you have all these dreams, like Asbury Lanes could have a pool. Like, we could have this, we could have apartments, we could have this, like, imagine. And so it's like, then the influx of money comes, and and I feel like they made it worse in some degree. Like, like, it's amazing to me that it's like a hard lesson to learn that money wins, but that doesn't necessarily dictate feeling or spirit or aesthetics.
That's the thing money can never buy, right? It's like, you know, no matter how much money you have, you can't just create it falsely.
Right. Yeah, and I think people feel that. I mean, there's like a sick part of me that keeps hoping that there'll be this thing that people love it, like our fans loved it, but like no one Instagrams about it, like there's just nothing, like there's no nothing, and I was just like, is it just because it just feels like a venue now, and we were never a venue, and I think that that's like the mistake that corporate people looked at, and they're like, look at this, it's a venue, it's a place where we can get a lot of kids to buy booze and, you know, see a band. And I was like, oh, that was always like sort of the afterthought.
You're right.
So it's a weird scene,
right? So I mean, can you recreate that somewhere else? Is that still part of you?
It's taken me 3 years to realize the part of me that it is, is that it's experience that I'm a creator of, and it doesn't necessarily isn't defined by just music or nightlife or art. It's for me, this success would have the catalyst of all three, because at the lanes I had that. But not to get all boring and dumb, but corporate music has taken over Asbury Park. So it's really hard to be an indie booker in the landscape of that.
Totally.
The Saint does it, which is amazing that Scott still, it's unbelievable to me that he can still do that. And like the brewery has cool shows happening. And like a lot of our old lanes employees work at the House of Independence. So they're trying their best to, I mean, they're independent bookers. They don't have Live Nation or AEG. So, I mean, it can happen, but it's just a, like, it was way more charming 10 years ago to email somebody and say, hey, my friends and I made a bowling alley into a performance space with an art gallery. You want to come hang out? And they'd right. be like, certain bands would be like, yeah, of course.
Right.
I don't know if there, I'm sure there's still bands that would be like that.
Sure.
However, I think it's harder when someone's like, oh, you like that cool little bowling alley? Those kids have a warehouse and they're throwing parties? Well, I'm going to give you $4,000 and those kids are going to...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Show you a good time. That will only happen, like, you will lose bands to money all the time because right. it's a job.
Right.
No, and it was happening towards the end that people forever, no one paid attention to us, even in our own town.
Mm-hmm.
And so we never had to fight for shows. And in the last 3 years, it was like, oh, this is ugly. This is why way back when Mel's like, we won't have to deal with any of this music politics, because we're going to have this cool space. And so when you realize, like, oh, no, it'll always end up in this, because people think you're making money, or people think that, like, well, I want what they have.
There was no competition back then.
Right.
It was easy to get the bands.
Yeah. Right. Because they were all, like, niche market bands. They weren't, like, mainstream bands.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that during our 11 years, I think we had some really cool things happen that I have to look back and be like, Jim Jarmusch washing bands is always like a surreal moment for me.
That's crazy.
Like All Tomorrow's Party. I don't know if you went to that in Asbury. But in 2010, this group did a very highly curated music event that was a European-based event that they basically would pick a band and they would let the band curate the lineup.
That's cool.
So they picked Portishead.
Wow.
And Portishead sort of picked the lineup. And one of them was Public Enemy. So it was just weird to have I mean, there was like 20 great bands, but it was just like Public Enemy's coming to this town. Like, you know, and like you think about that, or like, our door girl didn't know who Portishead was, so she consistently kept trying to charge them cover. And I'm like, quit it. It's Portishead. Right. And they were so happy to pay $5 to come in and eat tater tots late at night. So it's like you had this Shepherd Fairey came and did murals. Right. And it was just like a surreal moment where you're like, this is magic that something like this can happen. But that's you realize cool. when you sort of take away the layers, you're like, this can happen because someone's losing money. It seems like the coolest things don't necessarily have I don't even know how to say it, like, very cool artistic things do happen and they're financially sound, but it feels like a lot of times that you see these really experimental things and you're like, did this make any money? And they're like, no. Because it's just too crazy, you know?
Right.
I mean, we had the Paul Green School of Rock where we took a stage and put it on Fourth Avenue, and you know, we watched Bad Brain. We watched a mosh pit on Fourth. That was the length of Fourth Avenue, which is the avenues there are huge, and like watching Bad Brains play to a bunch of little kids on a street in Asbury Park was like, and then like hearing Jello Biafra like lecture in the Paramount about police brutality was just, and while he was requesting bananas was just like, what world is this that we live in? Like, magic can happen.
That's a good little pocket of time.
That is.
So I feel like for me, it's experience.
Right. That's cool. All right. So let's segue in a little to the Parlor Gallery and then Pork Chop. We got to work you in here so you're not, I don't want you to be bored over there.
It's like, but this is my life.
But we're doing like it's a little 2-for-1 podcast. So I thought we'd sort of like, we'll kind of separate you both a little and then we'll bring it all together somehow.
Right on.
But so about 2009, Parlor Gallery opened.
Mm-hmm.
Was it in the spot it is now or was it somewhere else?
No, actually in 2006, I opened a gallery called Crybaby Gallery with a friend of mine in a location that is now at Shelter Home, which is right across the street. We thought it would be really great to open a gallery. Or I thought it would be really great to open an erotic art gallery in a second floor walk up. I thought that like Asbury could sustain that in my brain. I think we did 3 erotic shows, and my friend / business partner's parents who were funding it were like, what are you doing? Like, this is crazy. It was in a cool loft though. So I think we did get people there. I think so.
I think it wasn't too bad. They weren't lining up.
But. No, they weren't. But I thought, like, well, from the lanes, we had a gallery in the back lounge. And basically born out of, like, I hate wood paneling. We have to cover everything, but we didn't have the money to do it. So I was like, let's start doing art shows. And it seemed to me that people were very enthusiastic about art. And I was like, wait, are there galleries in town? And then I started looking. I'm like, there's actually lots of galleries in town. And I'm like, but none of the art I like. Right. So I think it was like a selfish need to open something that I thought, like, well, if all these kids at the lanes are excited about art, they'll come buy art. But that's not necessary. Right. You know, you're in an environment where you're like seeing a band and you're drinking and you're like, oh, I like that painting. $400. I could get that. You know, it's much different when you go into a gallery and you're like, it's white walls. And, you know. So with that being said, we were in that location for almost 3 years. And then we kept seeing this property across the street get developed.
Right.
And I was like, my business partner at the time was like, we need a storefront. There's no one walking up these stairs. And so basically a restaurant was going to go in our location, and they backed out at the last minute. And I knew the landlord. So he was like, what if I hook you up? Will you move in till I find a better tenant? And we've been there 10 years.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
So what kind of hookup did you get originally? Do you remember?
Ironically, it wasn't a hookup, I think, at all. I think that in retrospect.
Yeah, you guys are just psyched to have a space.
Yeah, I think that it was like, oh, we're going to charge you, like, I don't know, whatever, $2,500. And I was like, that's great for a storefront. But now I realize what people pay 10 years later. I'm like, maybe it wasn't a hookup. But
you're ahead of your time. Like,
you could say that. Yeah. But our street was great. That because Alan and Susie's, if you remember them, they were like this really dynamic, wacko, lovely couple from New York. That they had a clothing store in New York,
right?
Where Cookman Creamery was, they had a clothing store there, and she basically sold vintage furniture or vintage clothing, but like high end labels and theater clothes. And she was this dynamic, like, redhead with like crazy curly hair, and her partner had white, long curly hair, and I don't know how to explain Alan and Susie, but there was like a little caricature of them for their like ad. They were just so dynamic. And so when I first came to Asbury, I'm like, how does, if this woman can make it here, I could do an art gallery. Right. So we were really psyched to sort of move in close to her, but then she moved right after we sold the building or whatever. But at that time, the first block of Cookman Avenue was the only sort of really sort of redeveloped.
Right.
So it was great for us because we were like, when you walked in the town, I was like, oh, look, there's a gallery.
Right.
So it was definitely 10 years ago a challenge, but the same kind of challenge is now, which is ironic because if you study anything about business plans, it's like you do these projections and stuff, and you're like, you can't project how your streets are going to develop.
Right.
And that's the one thing that's funny about Asbury. It's, you know, the same things that plagued us 10 years ago plague us now.
Right. That's true. So what was your focus like when you first opened there? Like, was it local artists?
It was I wanted a way to sort of combine local artists with international and national artists as like a way to have engagement. Like, these people are never going to go to New York. Some of these people in Asbury Park are never going to a museum or never going to an art gallery. So what can I bring to them that they can, like, sort of like, they can, what's the word I'm looking for? That they could, like, they recognize and be like, that's something I like.
Right.
I didn't think I'd like it. Oh, that's art? That's cool. Mm-hmm. So I guess it started off as, like, just art I liked.
Right.
An artist I liked. But, like, just like the bowling alley, I sent a lot of emails like, hey, I'm opening this gallery at Asbury Park. You should come check out the town. It's really cool. And some artists are into that. But, like, there's this stigma about New Jersey that I found to be true. Like, why would you open a gallery in New Jersey? You're like, what do you mean? Because I feel like, you know, Asbury is to Austin, like Asbury is to New Jersey as Austin is to Texas. Right. So it's like, you know.
That's true, actually.
You know what I mean? I've never been to Austin, but I can, like, so when I would tell people we're in New Jersey, I'm like, but it's not like New Jersey.
Right.
Like, I would be like, you just don't get it. If you saw it, it's this pocket of, you know, and I try to explain what it is. And so it was a struggle in the beginning to get artists, established artists to show with us. So we did rely on, like, just people that we knew or people that we had some sort of connection with.
Right. I mean, I guess as a curator, you're really betting on your own taste anyway, right?
Which is kind of weird. Because, like, when something doesn't sell, you're like, man, does my taste just suck? Right. Or, like, did I do something wrong? And, like, maybe people don't like what I like anymore. Right. Yeah, it is. It's curating is a weird thing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, like, any kind of art, right? Like, people in the record business, like, you're convinced, like, why did this band never break?
Right? Yeah.
Like, what does the public not see?
Yeah, and what do I see that they don't see? And then you think, like, well, maybe they'll get it 4 years from now, or maybe they're never going to get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there'll be times where Jen will be like, I don't know about this piece. Like, I don't know if we should put it in the show.
Right.
And that's the first piece that's, you know?
It's like a curse. Yeah. Right. It's true. It's absolutely.
Yeah, that's true.
Porkchop hangs all our shows, which is great. So if you ever come into Parlor and you're like, wow, this is great, Porkchop hangs them for us. Because I feel like early on, my business partner, Jill, and I would say, well, I don't like that there. And then we would ultimately get into this, like, nonsense bickering. Right. So Porkchop was like, let me just drop it and
be
leave.
Like, why don't you guys leave, and then you come back, and it'll be hung, and then that'll be it.
And that'll be done. So, yeah.
Right.
So he's got to see, like, me being like, that sucks. Who's going to buy that? And then I'll text him, like, guess what piece sold?
And you put it, like, front and center.
Totally. Yeah.
So front and center, you have a sweet, like, window.
Yeah, but so, people miss us all the time. Like, constantly we're like, when did you open? I'm like, 10 years ago.
Right.
So I don't know if it's the color of our building or, like, people are so hyper-focused on getting off the train and, like, getting somewhere. Right. Or
by the time you wake up, you're, like, a block in or
something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I feel like a lot of people miss us. Like, I never saw you here before.
Right.
Yeah, I've been here.
But so Porkchop, you had a piece in the front window there like a couple months ago. And I don't know what it was. I'm going to say it's a fish, but it's probably like a mammal or something. But
No, it was a shark.
Shark.
It was a hammerhead shark.
That's what it was. It was a hammerhead shark.
Yeah, 10-foot hammerhead
shark. That thing was dope. Is it, I mean, so, and now you have, I looked it up, it's called Das Bug.
Isn't great? In the front,
that thing gets a lot of attention too.
Yes.
So between those two, you've had like a couple like really attention grabbers.
We tried to figure out how Das Bug and the shark could live together there, but it was just they're both 10 feet tall. Yeah. They're 10 feet long. So it was, I was like, can we put them in the middle like they're battling? But yeah. So
they are good sort of attention getters, at least.
They
people
totally
like,
are.
Oh, there's a gallery here.
Right. So what went into creating the shark? Is there a title for it?
I never remember.
It's what called
I called
The Messenger.
It. Okay.
The Messenger.
I never remember what I called it. The story with the shark was I knew this guy that had I was painting on like swordfish and stuff like that.
Right.
And this guy wanted one of the ones that I had. And we were going to hash out some kind of like payment plan.
Right.
And the next time I saw him, I was like, well, what's the deal, you know? And he was like, oh, look what I got. And he pulls out his phone and he's got this giant hammerhead shark.
No way.
And it was painted like a regular shark. I was like, oh, God, where'd you get that? And I was like, how much did you pay for it, though? Because those things are expensive.
Right.
And he was like, oh, it was $400 on Craigslist. And the guy was up in like Nyack. And I made him meet me halfway. And I got it for $200.
No
and I was
way.
Like, get out of here. That's insane. I was like, so do you still want the swordfish? He's like, dude, I got a hammerhead shark.
Right.
It's way cooler. I was like, and then Jen was like, well, why don't you trade him? I was like, you want to trade? He's like,
barter system.
You know,
nice.
I'll trade fish for fish. I'll do that all day.
Right.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And then I was like, all right, cool. How about we trade? And like, you know, maybe just give me like, you know, $300 because you know, for the paint job. He's like, oh yeah, I'll totally do that. You know, but here's the thing. My buddy borrowed some money from me. I'm going on vacation with my girl. So if you could give me, you know, a couple months.
Right.
I was like, yeah, dude, whatever. You know, I'll come up and pick up the fish because I was having a show coming up and I wanted to get it done. And so I did that. And that was maybe 5 years ago. And
wow.
I still haven't gotten the money.
Oh, are you serious? No,
dude disappeared.
But he has a hammerhead shark.
But I do have a hammerhead shark.
That's pretty sweet.
Put in a window.
Right. People out. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about your background. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Long Island,
right.
In Smithtown. It's about halfway out on the North Shore.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to school in Philly, the University of Arts.
Right.
And then after that, I took like a year off, and then I did grad school down in VCU in Richmond. And they were all, that was all in sculpture. I had my master's in sculpture.
Right.
And then I moved to Rhode Island for a while, and then I ended up in New Jersey, and I've lived in Asbury probably like 22 years ago.
Wow.
And then bought a house down in Brick, and then ended up back in Asbury, like, I don't know, 10 years ago?
He calls you back. More than that, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And how did you guys meet originally?
I guess through, kind of through the Lanes, or when Mel had the that other bar, the Odd Fellows.
Mm-hmm.
I was intrigued by the fact that there was, and I'm still intrigued by the fact that there was this, like, one artist that everywhere I walked, I was like, there's a painting by him again, and there's another painting, and there's another painting, and why are there so many paintings by this dude Porkchop, and, like, what's the deal?
Right.
Like, why, are, if he's, you know, like, if you're showing in that many galleries here, you could show anywhere, like,
right.
You know, and it's always, like, I get this idea of, like, what's the bigger picture? What are you doing? And, you know, it goes back to my whole, like, dissecting and trying to figure out what, how to make something work. And
right.
So I think I was intrigued that he could do these big, huge, like, oh, who made that Mata Hari out of, you know, he made, like, in Oddfellas, there was, like, this awesome, cool, like, rendition of Mata Hari that he painted in wood. And it, she was like, how big was she?
I think it was about 8 feet. And then it did these giant Sultan swords kind of around it.
Like a ray.
And I was like,
oh, wow.
I'll have to send you a picture so you can see. But it was wild. I was like, who's doing this? And they're like, that guy. And like everybody just, he's like, he's always, I feel like he's, you've always been sort of like the town's artist. Like, oh, it's Porkchop. It's Porkchop. He just does cool shit. Like, and I was like, man.
I guess if you're around long enough, out of default.
So were you,
on everything.
Were you a professional, like working solely as an artist at that time? What else were you doing?
I had a painting business with a couple of guys that were brothers, and we did like regular house painting and faux finishes when they were real big.
Okay.
Murals in kids' rooms, and I painted, you know, grapevines in every kitchen in Colts Neck.
That's hilarious. And,
so I did that for a while, and then
I hope you didn't sign those, did you?
Good thing you forget to sign your work.
That's right.
Yeah. And then I did construction with my buddy Brad, who had a gallery a long time ago, also like maybe 18 years ago.
Right.
It's right across the street from where their gallery is.
Yeah.
It was so called Asbury Art.
It's actually where Catsbury is.
Okay. Yeah.
And, super cool. Like,
really?
Super cool.
And back then, like, there was nothing going on the street. So
right.
We would have bands on the sidewalk and, you know, get to do whatever you want.
Right.
And the whole town was kind of like a canvas because there was boarded up buildings everywhere.
Right.
So we would paint stuff and put it on buildings and hang stuff out of trees. And
wow.
Yeah, it was super fun back
then.
That's
cool.
I think that's one of the first times I came here. I was like, how do they park they're allowed to park the cars on the street? Because coming from LBI, there was all these rules. And I was like, what do you mean? You're just going to put art on the wall? Like, on that abandoned building? You're just going to hang a canvas? And like, who's going to take it? I'm like, this is awesome. Asbury is so cool. So
yeah, it was kind of the Wild West.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss the good times.
Johnny Cash was the sheriff wandering the streets, right?
In a cape.
Right. So,
probably crazy. High.
So how did you get into art, like, as a kid? What was your early, like, when did you discover interest and talent?
I guess I always sort of drew and stuff. My grandfather was an architect, and he painted. My aunt was a painter.
Right.
So it was just kind of everybody in my family's artistic in their own kind of way.
Right.
And
so it was kind of encouraged as a
kid. Yeah, it definitely wasn't, you know, you shouldn't do that.
Right.
You know? So I'm the youngest of five.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared a room with my brother, and he always drew and painted and stuff. So I was like, oh, I want to be like you, you know. So I did. That's kind of how it started,
right.
I guess. Yeah.
Do you remember what kind of stuff you liked to draw initially?
It's pretty much the same as what I do today.
Is it really?
Yeah, skulls.
Skulls. Yeah. Skulls.
So your book covers are pretty twisted as a kid?
Yeah.
Which people don't even know what book covers are.
Right. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
They don't. Although his kids always have him make book covers still.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They'd be like, can you draw on this?
That's
like,
sweet.
Yeah.
Right. They're not selling them, are they?
Yeah, they probably have them all stashed.
I'm telling you, his youngest son is as smart as probably stashing away stuff to sell.
He's probably got it filed somewhere.
Isn't that funny?
Really
we
funny.
Don't have book covers anymore.
Yeah.
That's wild.
that was how you made your initial statement about school, right?
It
was
and who like, you were. Like, and
this is who, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right?
This
for
is what
sure.
I listen to. This is who I'm into.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. I,
yeah, and went from that to jean jackets to.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. Did people pay you back then to paint on jean jackets?
Yeah, when I was like, whatever, eighth grade, ninth grade, started doing jackets.
Did you really?
That's great.
Yeah. That is cool.
He still does them, which is funny. I don't even know how you started painting on them again, but
it was a couple like years ago. We were like hanging out in a bar with my friends, and he had a jean jacket, and I was like, "Why don't you paint something on the back?" He's like, "What?" I was like, "I don't know, man. You got to do something hard, like some Iron Maiden stuff right. or something, you know?" And he was like, "Well, would you do it?" And I was like, "Sure, I would." You know, I was a little tipsy, and next day he's like, "Here's my jacket." Right. I'm like, "For what?" He's like, "You said you were gonna paint on it." And I was like, And that started a whole. I ended up doing like 20 after
Did
that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You have a bag, right?
Yeah.
That looks pretty cool. I noticed that when I.
I was like, "Pork Chop, I got this awful bag," and he's like, "Just paint on it." I'm like, "Can you paint on it?"
Yeah. Gotta keep my mouth shut. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I know that looks pretty sick. Actually,
for a while, your hashtag is "paint on everything," and I'm like, "Yep, yeah. See, there you go."
That's pretty cool. So what was it like going to art school? Is it like what you expect? Is it
is it like it is in the movies?
Or is it, did you learn something?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I definitely learned techniques and things.
Right.
I remember like freshman year, I was like, we're all going to be famous and, you know, like that whole thing.
Right.
And then by the time you graduate, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe like, I got through this and I owe this money. Right. But,
and I owe all this money. It's yeah. so true.
Right.
But it definitely taught you some stuff.
Right.
I think it's a hard situation for kids going to art school because if you don't have the drive and the hustle,
right,
you're not gonna make it. You
totally.
Know, and it's kind of sold as like, oh no, if you know, if you just do this, it'll be great and
right.
everything will work out.
Right.
You know, and that's not the case.
Yeah. You know? Did they teach you any of that at school? Like how to go out
at the time?
Yourself?
They didn't. No. You know. At least, you know, especially in fine art.
Sure.
You know, it's, right. it's not, you either do it and you hustle and, you know, pursue it
right.
with full intent to, like, make it.
Yep.
Or you end up, you know, doing something else and doing that on as a hobby or something.
Right.
You know?
It is weird. When you go to art school, I think they should teach you about all the things that you have to diversify to make money.
Right.
That's the challenge. And I think when, you know, knowing all the artists that I know...
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I challenge with is that hustle that he's talking about, because I was one of those kids that was like, oh, if you just throw yourself into something, you'll make it. But that's not
right.
the case, especially with art, because there's so many sort of variables that go into why something sells or why somebody becomes famous in terms of art fame or
totally.
Whatever.
Right.
But like, yeah, if you learn how to hustle, you can make it because you can have longevity.
Right.
To develop your craft and figure out how to sell your work and stuff. But like, we get interns all the time that are like, I'm going to be an artist. I'm like... Do you know how to, what else do you know how to do?
Right.
Do you know how to bartend? Do you know how to make things? Do you know how to like do post? I mean, I don't even know.
Social media.
Yeah, seriously. Right. It's like you got to do all, you have to learn all these things to do
right.
while you're waiting and work on your own craft
right.
at the same time.
That's true.
Yeah.
Was it a different experience studying sculpture than later?
After I graduated, I didn't have the space to make sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't do it for a bunch of years.
Yeah.
You know, and then I got into making furniture, and then, you know, I did construction stuff, and
right.
that learned, you know, I learned how to build things in a different way, and going to grad school, I learned how to, you know, weld, and so I ended up teaching me all these trade sort of skills that I ended
cool,
up using
right?
yeah.
in other ways other
right.
than making art, you know. I worked at a boat building place out
did
in
you
Hampton,
really?
So I learned how to do fiberglass,
oh,
and,
wow.
you know. All those sort of now have kind of come together, and now
right.
I'm using all these weird skills that I picked up along
that's
the way. You know?
Pretty crazy. You never think of like all that goes into sculpture, then, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's people that are like, oh, all I do is, you know, stone carve.
But, right.
The stuff I've been doing recently has been like, it's like, you know, fiberglass and shaping foam and making molds and doing all kinds of weird stuff.
And right. it's weird because if you dissect what you've done to get to that point, like you wonder if like it would have changed your what
right.
you're doing now. Because
yeah.
like if I didn't learn to fiberglass a boat, would I even mess around with it?
Right.
Like if
right.
I didn't learn how to resin this, would I even play with that medium? And
right.
So
yeah.
it's cool.
I even think like even doing all those, you know, grapevines and people's kitchens.
Right.
Learned some kind of like totally. Painting skills. That
do you think there's some woman in Cold Snack that's buildings? Like, oh, that artist pork chop. I have a grapevine in my kitchen. Yeah. I wonder if I can cut it out sell it.
Yeah. What a great pear you did over my sink. Yeah.
That's too sweet. Funny.
Oh, man.
That's hilarious.
That really is.
I never
crazy.
Even thought of that.
Yeah. So you're right, though, because like your life is a combination of all those little things you do along the way. But were you like, were there moments along that time where you're like beat up? Like you're like, I effing hate fiberglassing boats. Like, what? Like, it's like Animal House, 7 years of college down the drain.
Totally.
I mean, there's definitely jobs that I was in. You know, I also landscaped and built, you know, like waterfalls and like. Mm. You know, there's always that time you're like, oh, man, I can't deal with this anymore.
Right.
You know, and then you move on and you do something else.
Right.
I never really stuck with any of those jobs that long where I was like, this is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
You know? I think the hardest part is that
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And trying to come home from doing all that and being like, I have to paint today or I have to sculpt or...
Yeah, no matter what job I had, I always...
Were you?
I was always still painting and stuff on my own.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's what separates like people that make it than... Those that can't, right? The ones that get sucked into this sucks and I'm not doing what I want to do.
Yeah.
Then you just get down in that downward spiral.
I also think like working with so many artists, you can start to tell like who in terms of making it will survive because like for instance Porkchop would make art if he had no audience. And I think that sort of defines an artist, right. Whether they're making music or books or whatever. It's like, I don't care if anyone listens or hears this or sees it. Like, I need to make it and I'm going to make it. So it's like that kind of like sort of like soulful drive that makes you get through all the other kind of garbage.
Yeah. It's funny. That's like one of a memorable Lane show I saw once. I don't even know what year it was, a long time ago. It was a band called Collapsing Lungs, and they had gotten signed to
it. Was it on Punk Night on a Wednesday?
It may have been. I have no clue.
But isn't it funny that we had to have a punk night at some point that no one wanted to book punk bands? That we had to have a punk night? That's like another technology. That doesn't exist anymore either. Like,
that is
punk
crazy.
Has become mainstream anyway.
Right. Yeah. But these dudes, like, they had a flash of label money, like, got signed, had the bus, had nice gear.
Yep.
And I thought they would have there were literally like 10 kids in the place who all came to see like the local.
It was definitely Wednesday.
Rappers that were opening for them that came out and put a cassette, you know, and rapped over it.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, these guys are going to bail. And they came out and just, you would have thought they were playing the Garden.
Right.
Like,
it was that's amazing.
Insane.
Yeah.
Like, and that sticks
that's
with
what
me
I'm talking
so
about.
Long.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, you're like, if you can play that like that for 10 people, you've got what it takes to.
I mean, the dude looked like he was putting on a show for like hundreds of screaming people in front of him. Like, it was intense. Like, you know.
It is intense.
No one.
I was usually hiding in the back.
It was like the greatest show
moments.
I've ever seen. Yeah. It was awesome.
Those always made me feel really uncomfortable. I was like, oh, no one's here to see them. It's so sad.
Right.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. No, it's all good.
But yeah, that's, I feel like watching those types of performers or seeing people that are making art that, like, you know, Porkchop as an artist makes work that's very hard to sort of wrap your head around, sort of conceptually, but visually it's very appealing.
Mm-hmm.
But people see it. Have you seen his studio work? You may have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the skulls people either see as scary in Halloween or they see it as something completely different.
Right.
And it sort of like defines his audience. And he's not going to quit making it if he doesn't have an audience because he wants to make it.
That's,
you know?
I mean, I learned about you from like, you know, outdoor paintings. But when I saw that shit, I was like, oh my God. Like, I felt like a, you know, ancient archaeologist that found an unknown civilization, basically.
That's exactly what you're supposed to feel.
It's friggin' killer.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's funny. We take, he goes to art fairs every year in Miami. Mm-hmm. And so he has a booth where he does an installation and it looks very, they're very balanced. It looks like a shrine or like a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Shrine's pretty close.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. But the people that come and look at it, you can tell right away instinctually. Like,
yeah, people are super into it, or they're like total stink face, like can't even look at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we've decided that like old wealthy women do not like board games, right. Right. Which is a bummer.
That's right. Listen, ladies, stick to the vines in the kitchen, right?
But I think it is interesting. His public work is so different than his studio practice,
right?
And I think that that's awesome because right. It gives him the sort of Let me just talk for you. It gives yes. you the flexibility to like. Wow, I want to paint a giant elephant, or I want to paint yeah. a...
Like, people will come into the gallery and be like, oh, do you have any paintings by Porkchop? And they're like, oh, no, we have, you know, some of his sculptures. And they're uh-huh. like, that's not the same guy.
Yeah, like, they get really right. like, well, where's right. the mermaids? Right, and yeah. where's the pretty ladies?
I thought
ladies?
He was a maritime artist.
Totally.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's I think that's fun as an artist that you can be like... And I mean, I think it's cool that you do that for the public, too. It's like a lot of artists will only do what...
Right.
Like, artists that are known for their public work will yeah. only do that work. So their studio... practice reflects their public work. So right. a lot of the people from the Wooden Walls Project, mm. that work that they do is what they do at home.
Sure.
Which is, I think, cool because when people discover Porkchop's work, then they have to, like, go through this other process of, like, what is that?
Right.
I don't understand.
Right. So let's talk about that work. Is there, like, a broad name for what you would call, like, is it, like, a you view it as, like, a series or anything, or is it just what you do?
The sculptural stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I started doing that probably about 6 years ago. Mm. Yeah, I don't know if I really would categorize it or have a name for right. it, per se, but it seems like it keeps on evolving, and uh-huh. so hopefully it'll keep on right. changing into something.
So what was kind of like, what was your, did you have like a concept in the beginning, or was it just you were screwing around with stuff?
I was just kind of fooling around, painting on stuff. This guy that I knew had these really high-end mannequins, and he's like, you should try to paint on these.
Right.
And I was like, all right, you know, and I did, and then I painted on some for a while, and then I was like, well, I should probably start pulling these things apart and making other pieces on them or sculpting them a little bit more since I haven't done that. And
right.
that led into, you know, and I was always into, like, ancient civilizations and, right. you know, religious, you know, iconography.
Right.
And so I started putting that in, and I made up these own sort of, like, hieroglyph sort of lettering system that I put on them, and...
So that is, like, you created, that's not, like, it's not an existing...
Nah, it looks like Sanskrit, it looks right. like Aramaic, but it's all made up stuff, right. yeah.
It's great, we had a professor from Monmouth University come in, and they're like, I'm fascinated by Porkchop's language, and,
yeah.
like, it's not a language, and he's like, oh, I know, I teach ancient languages and wow. stuff, and I was like, oh, no, there's no shtick here, he's gonna know everything I'm talking about, so I asked him to look at it.
Right.
And he gave me, like, the whole rundown of where he thought the inspiration came from, which uh-huh. is strange because he, I'm sure you probably haven't figured out where it's come from. Sometimes artists just do stuff. It's in there. And you have to go backwards after you've created it to figure out where it came from.
Right.
But this guy just, like, broke it down. Like, this is from this ancient blah, 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 blah. Mm. And this language is, like, it's nothing I've ever heard of. And I was like, that is so exciting to yeah. know that, like... He's creating something that someone is like, oh, I see where the inspiration, whether the artist knows it or not.
Right. So is there, like, do you keep track of it? Like, are you creating a language as you go along?
There's probably like 20-something characters that right. I sort of kind of use over and over. But every once in a while, another one sort of pops up
right.
for whatever reason. Like, if I screwed one of them up and I'm making it to something else right. or...
And then you're like, oh, that one's
like,
cool.
Oh, that one's kind of neat. Yeah.
Right. So if you plant something on, like, a forehead, does it mean something to that particular... Does it say something about what that piece is, or is it more like a design?
It's more like a design,
yeah.
But I do tend to use certain ones on the forehead and certain ones on the arms for whatever reason.
Yeah, that guy, the teacher was like, I've noticed he uses, like, he pointed it out, like, there is a repetition of this character that is reminiscent of this on the arms and the head. Do you think he did this? I was like, I don't think he thought about any of it.
A lot of people read into stuff, yeah.
But that's kind of the beauty of art, you know,
right.
like I'm a language person, so uh-huh. it kind of baffles me to think that you could create something that has no meaning, which
right.
is kind of like a big lofty idea. But for him, he's a visual person. So
right.
like for him, it's like, why would you need language? So it's kind of just sort of like how your brain works.
Right.
You know, so yeah. when people come in to see his work in the public, like, say we do an art fair. They just can't wrap their head around that it means nothing.
Right. Right.
Yeah. They need a story.
It must everyone mean something.
Everyone needs a story. Like, why is he doing this work? And, you know, and it's interesting. I feel like, you know, we as the non-artists or the narrative people,
right.
we kind of make the stories. That's why, like, there's art critics. And I don't know if the beauty of artists is a lot of times they don't know where it comes from. And that's
right.
kind of the cool part about inspiration and creativity. It's like we're... it's an energy like anything else, and they're making it. And
that is cool.
They don't need to tell you what it's about.
Right.
But in art school, you go through all these like horrible critiques, so you have to talk about what your work's about. So I'm sure that's probably why you could care less about.
The story shouldn't be better than your piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right. True. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, with artists, you know, looking at, they'll give you these really long, like, my body of work is about this, and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, then you look at the work and you're like, what? Like, what? It's crazy.
Right.
So, but I like the story. So yeah. I'm one of those stupid people that are like, I want to know why?
Yeah. So do you have any civilizations you're particularly like fascinate you or interested in?
For like 3 years, I looked up every like YouTube ancient, like I've seen all the ancient alien things. I've seen, you know, but yeah, I'm just fascinated by any, you know, the Sumerians, the
Dogons,
know, the Dogons, the, you know, Assyrians, the Carthaginians. Like there was like, yeah, I watched all of them.
Right.
I think, yeah, it was. I think they're fascinating, you know.
Right.
But to think that, you know, like Göbekli Tepe, how it's, you know, 15,000 BC. Like a lot of cool things were going on way before we thought things were going on.
It is
and
crazy.
And there was all this other knowledge and stuff. And yeah, I was super into that for a long time.
I also think that one of the things that I think is so cool about your work that you don't really sort of articulate because you don't need to is playing with the idea of reappropriation, because we live in this world where everything is reappropriated and people just make up their own narrative however they want it to be. So the idea of these women became like, I'm just going to make my own goddesses. Like, I can make my own deities. I can make, you know, and as an artist, you can do that because you're an artist and you can. And so thinking about how reappropriation is a response in religion is crazy. Like,
so
watching
like
him,
certain things will look like, oh, that looks sort of Egyptian, but it also clearly looks Mayan, and it also has, you know, reminiscence of like ancient Hindu, and you know,
so basically the work looks like they're sort of like something you'd see in a museum, and then when you get in like enclosed or inspection, you're like, I've never seen that. Like,
so for
a viewer to be like, I want to look at it because it's familiar, because I think I've seen it before, and then have be like, I don't know what this is. That's great. Like, I feel like as a creative, that's a success, whether you have financial success from it or not.
Totally. Do you ever make up a story for any of this stuff in your mind?
Like, yeah, at one point, because somebody was like, you should have a story. So I started, you know, thinking about like, oh, well, maybe there's this religion, and, you know, it's always been around, but you can only get to it through like meditation or like trance stuff, and then it opens up this whole thing, and
he's like, meh, blah 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 blah. But I think that as a creative who makes it, like, you have already, you don't need to know why you're making it, but everybody else in the world needs to know why you're making it. I mean, that's why when you go to museums, when you see antiquities, there's a story. There's always a story. So I think it doesn't, you know, if the work wasn't strong, then, like, who cares about the story? But, like, if the story is, if the work's strong and people are, like, intrigued by it and they're like, what is this? You have to say, you can't just be like, I mean, I guess you can. You could just be like, oh, it's a mannequin. I manipulated it. I think skulls are cool, you know, but you can't do that because whether you have come to that point or not, it's in there and you're doing something with intent. So it's trying to find the intent.
Right. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Yeah. Do they still exist, or had they been? Were they wiped out?
That's true. Yeah. Well, but they're from a future quasi religion that we have. We're wiped out.
We're trying to.
So I'll give you the spiel that I like. Boyce's like, you suck. So I like to think of them as antiquities that have been like in sort of like picture Mad Math. Max, where like they're digging up remains of like humans, right? And they're like looking at these things that haven't decomposed, and one of them could be one of his pieces, and they're like, what? It's like a mannequin, you know, and you know, with tattoo, you know, if you see contemporary mannequins, they have tattoos on them, they have these huge boobs and these butts, and so it's like it says something about our society,
right?
So what if people think they're sacred? Like these weird, like sort of plastic icons of like consumerism become sacred.
Right.
And so pork chops, and they create these deities to be, you know, they've created these sculptures of these deities that once existed. And
right.
like, that's my whole jam. Cause I was like, cause they look like, when he puts them together in installation form, they look like they could be sacred or like in a church.
Totally.
And they look like this. He does these cool, like little found object sculptures where he like manipulates them because
right.
not everybody has the money to buy a giant sculpture or the space. So he's like, everyone, if they're into it, they should have a piece too.
Yep.
So, they look like little effigies, and like it's weird that instinctually he's building these sort of installations as the same psychology of churches. Because if you start to read about the psychology of church, where they put, not to get too heavy, but like the higher the like sort of deity or you
effigy.
Know effigy is the more who you should pay more attention to.
Right.
So there's a hierarchy to religion, you know. And so when you start to dissect all of that, you're like, whoa, it's all manipulation in some weird sort of, I mean, it can be a good manipulation, but still weird that like that's a thing. And that's all art too. Like that's somebody's like the psychology of art, you know. And so it's a layered process. So I think it, the work can be as deep or as shallow or as light as you want it to be. But I think what's cool about it is like there was some in your brain, there was like, wouldn't it be cool to make your own goddesses?
Yeah.
And that's like, that was like how, what born that sort of kind of cool little idea has made this whole body of work, which I think is really awesome to watch.
It is really cool. All right. So let's talk about wooden walls, which is like a different, that ties you both together again, but like a different type of art for you. Like a lot of your sculptures, people would totally, not sculptures, but paintings or murals, people would totally recognize from like around Asbury.
Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned the mermaid one earlier. I forget to tell you, it's Ruthie and somebody.
Andrea.
You have to tell them that story. It's really good how they got named.
Yeah, so I'm painting this thing, and this guy's like, I'm on the lift, and he's like, yo, and I'm my headphones on. I'm like, what do you want? He's like, do you ever name your murals? And I was like, nah, not really. He was like, well, my girl's name is Ruthie. She's been in town forever. You know, like, would you name it after her? And I was like, I was just like, yeah, I will. And he's like, really, you do that? I was like, yep. And I just kept painting. And so then I was going to name it Ruthie. And then this other, one of my other friends was like, oh, you ever see this movie where the seal's name is Andre? I'm like, all right, I'll put that on there too. And that's kind of how that happened. Yeah.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. So that one, I think, like I read that your idea was sort of like the mermaids looking out to the sea, right?
Right.
Kind of. So what was your, like, did you have, were you given some instructions, like, we want you to create this particular thing for this place? Or was it like,
nah, it was
this
kinda,
is your space, do what you want?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just seemed like a perfect thing. It was like kind of facing where she could look out to the sea. And there was this idea of like, oh, she's looking at, you know, what's coming in and what the future could be. And that kind of thing. Like, again, I hate the story part of the art telling, so, you know, but that was kind of my idea, I guess.
Right.
You know,
was there a reason you made her a pinup chick? I always think it's because you looked at the building and you're like, oh, this looks like a building from the 60s or the 50s.
I think it was, it was probably because I just wanted to paint
a pinup chick. She's a cute pinup chick.
Yeah, totally. I mean, does it blow you away sometimes? Like, I mean, you walk by that every day, there's people taking their picture next to
it. Yeah, it's crazy. You know? The way it kind of started, I wanted to do that same building, I don't know, it was probably like 9 years ago.
Mm.
And at the time, Madison Marquette was like, well, we don't know what we're doing with that building, but
we
could use the casino, that big wall in the casino, to paint on. I was like, well, what part?
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole thing, you could just paint on the whole thing. I was like, all right, cool. So I got my buddy Brad, who had Asbury Art. I was like, why don't you do one side and I'll do the other side. And then I did that big flapper octopus thing, you know? And after I did that, the amount of people that were like, oh, my wedding photos or my engagement photo, and this is me pregnant in front of your mural, and this is, you know, this is me and my boyfriend jumping up in the air. You know, like, it was pretty bizarre, you know? And that's kind of how things sort of moving along with getting more artists down and doing more murals. And now it's like a photo shoot every 5 seconds.
It's crazy because when he did that mural, I guess it was 2009 or 10, it was kind of like, it might have been earlier than that, but it was interesting because we had a mural ordinance before we had a mural.
That's
so
crazy.
We had to find like back doorways to do murals because you'd have to get permission from the city.
Really?
It was just stupid. So when Matt, when they asked him to do that wall, I was like, are they going to pay you? And he's like, no, but they're going to give me paint. I was like, man, they should pay us to, like, we should have murals. We, you know, and it was like that conversation for 6 years. It was like, we should find somebody to give us money. And after Hurricane Sandy, everybody was so freaked out. All the photographers were like, is Pork Chop Mural okay?
Right.
So I realized that because that's where they would take all their subjects. And I was like, wait a minute. So that's part of their business.
Right.
So I was like, wait a minute. So this could be part of their business. And I was, so I went to them after Hurricane Sandy and I'm like, you have a lot of wood panels that make it look like kind of like sad up here. We should celebrate the wood. And that's how the Wooden Walls was born. It was like, can that's you just cool. give us a small budget and we'll ask artists that have like an association with Asbury so they understand like why they're not getting paid a lot and what the intent was. And so, but that's sort of Porkchop's Big Murals is what's the catalyst for the Wooden Walls was for sure.
Yeah. I mean, they've become like obviously iconic parts of Asbury, you know, like they seem like they've been there forever almost. In
yeah.
a way.
And that's yeah. the, I think it's, sadly we live in a town where everybody likes to rip down things. Mm-hmm. And like, so I think like what's going to be our new iconography, like right now, if you think of Asbury Park, there's like the Tilly sort of icon.
Right.
And that was a piece of public art, you know, in the 20s or 30s. I don't even know when it was there, the 40s and the 50s.
Right.
So, like, as we develop as a city, it's like we have to realize that there's certain iconography that we want to keep, even if we kill, you know, the buildings come down. And so I was like, well, how can we make our own new iconography? So, you know, it's one of those things where you don't know really what you're doing, and then you do it, and you're like, oh, yeah, that worked. That's amazing.
Right.
That it works.
Right. That is cool.
Because now the new thing's going to be like, what happens to the walls if they develop the buildings? You know, and I guess that maybe that was part of my idea was to, like, make people aware of buildings and development and, like, caring about your neighborhood and that sort of thing. Because the boardwalk is, like, its own city in itself. It's very separate to Asbury, I think, in some ways. And I think that's one of the problems, is that there is this disconnect between Asbury Park City and then the boardwalk. And so it's like, you know, if it's going to be a city, we should have art all over the city.
Right. So Porkchop's work is spread throughout the city.
Yeah.
I've been super fortunate to hook up with the Rent Asbury people.
Right.
And they're buying all these old apartment buildings and fixing them up. And their thing is like, oh, put a mural on a building. So,
How do you enjoy doing that type of stuff?
That's great.
Is it?
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so each one I try to do something a little bit different so they don't look all the same.
Sure.
And that's sort of fun to do, you know.
That is cool. And we had Jackie from Purple Glazed Donuts.
I love Jackie. She's
the best. And she was super proud of her.
Is she?
Yeah.
It's funny. I feel like I remember the day you're like, Jackie from Purple Glazed Donut asked me to do a mural. And I'm thinking Jimi Hendrix. I was like, what?
Well, I did like a bunch of drawings. And Jen was like, well, what's that one? And I was like, it's Jimi Hendrix. It's a donut. Right. You know?
She's like, there's no way she's ever going to do
that. She's not picking that. I was like, well, it'd be pretty funny if she did. And then that's the one. She's like, yeah, we definitely want to do that
one. That's awesome.
Yes. Yeah, she's so great.
Yeah,
yeah. Her podcast with you, or her interview with you, was really good.
She's
super animated. Right. I didn't know her story. I thought I knew her story, but it's good that you do these podcasts.
That's what's
then
cool.
We know the stories,
right?
Behind
and she has an awesome story, right?
Yeah, like, she does.
Know, always interested in something.
I do think that's what the cool part about Asbury is, and as we grow as a community, that I hope that we'll figure out how to hone our own creatives, like When we first, you know, when Porkchop lived here, it was probably no one, so you probably didn't meet a lot of people doing things. But then by 2000, people were moving here and doing things. And so everyone you met had a project.
Right.
Everyone you met was doing something.
Right.
So now I feel like that doesn't happen because no one can afford the rent. So it's like, what happens if I'm, Jen moves here now? Like, I wouldn't be able to do the lanes. I wouldn't be able to do a parlor gallery. So I get scared that, like, there's creatives yet to come.
Mm-hmm.
They can't.
Right.
Manipulate our, you know what I mean? Through their efforts. And that scares me a little bit about our town.
That's why I wonder, like, you know, you're always looking for, what's the next spot? You know?
Like, I know. You know, it's funny. I've been asked that like 3 times this week. And I'm like, wait, we haven't finished this spot.
Right,
like, totally. What do you mean? Where are we going? Everyone says Keyport, though.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think I've ever been to Keyport. But we've gone to Atlantic City a couple times. And I'm just like, this is a whole other. I saw a listing for a church. And I was like, yes, 9,000 square foot church.
Right.
For $250,000, that's like a dream. I could put an art retreat there. But
there was a reason why it was $250,000.
I don't know. It's just like there's a different energy there. It's not the, you know, Asbury had that sort of, as you all know, like, I feel like you could be robbed a bunch of times in Asbury. And I feel like that energy of like, I got to run to my car, it's still not as bad as the energy that's like that feeling of like crime in Atlantic City. It's just like people, I feel like, are walking around like, I don't know what to do with myself.
Right, right.
And which it's big. It's really big.
That's a problem. It's a, yeah, it's a bigger scale. But you're right. Like, those kind of things are possible. Like,
yeah.
I popped in, I was in Berlin once for a music tour.
Right.
And, like, that's almost like Asbury. It's like this whole decimated side of a country.
Yeah.
And you would see, like, graffiti artists from the city, like New York City, had
in
studios
Berlin.
There.
Yeah.
Because you could, some of the places you could just go and open something and no one cared. Because
I think
they
you still
like
can.
Abandoned buildings,
good.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
They
but
have
maybe like
a,
Atlantic City.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I think that it would take a collective force
totally.
Of people.
Right.
The money they pump into the casinos, really, if you could figure out how to tap into that in a sort of like, if you could align yourself with someone that understands that for that to be a functioning town again, you have to really work on a community. Mm. And I'm sure there's, and I'm, you know, I know people from Atlantic City, there's definitely a community there, but they're all questioning how that's going to happen still. Because there's no industry there.
Right.
So you'd have to bring, you know, industry in. I mean, development fascinates me because it looks all different ways. Like, I just thought a developer was a rich white person in their 40s to 70s that sat in at a table with, you know, and then I realized, like, now, no, like, it can be me.
Right.
Even if I don't have money, through my efforts, I can be a developer.
Totally.
Porkchop can be a developer because it
absolutely
it changes how your city grows.
Right.
And so I think that, like, that to me is interesting of how you can develop experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge is, like, oh, there's a reason that I always think it's, like, white guys from 40, because they're usually the ones with the money and they don't have the vision. So I think it's all about the way that Asbury has worked, I think, is great because the city government knows that there's people in the town with vision and they try to do what they can to support those visions. I think it just, it's sometimes it's small town life that gets in the way. It's,
that's
you know, you have these sort of structures that you have to figure out your way around them. So like, you know, for me, the wooden wall is the next process is how do you get it in town? And like Porkchop's figured it out because he's aligned with somebody that appreciates what public art does for a town, a building, a community, a neighborhood.
Totally.
So for me, it's like, I just went to the boardwalk because it was it had walls and it had a million visitors. And I felt for like an artist, that would be a really exciting way to get their art to be viewed.
Right.
So, but like, what's the next thing? You know, it's like, how can you experience the art and what does that look like?
Right.
And, but that's a hard thing because if I was sitting in a suit and had access to $20 million, it would be really easy for me, but maybe I wouldn't have the thoughts then.
Right.
It's like the double-edged sword of it.
No, it's true. So, I mean, I asked you a while ago, like, you know, could you recreate, like, the lanes or would you do it again? But you're really already doing it, like, even on a bigger scale. Like, if you think about what's going on, like, what you guys are doing throughout the town.
Yeah, when I get down, it's nice to have people like Porkchop and other people in my life that are like, you realize what you're doing is, like, affecting more. Like, if that's your, if that's what you want to do is change people's experience and give them a new experience, like, this is a much bigger scale.
Right.
But I guess it's, for me, it's like, I think one of the things that I really loved about the lanes was seeing how that experience could inspire you and take it outside of the lanes, whatever it is you might have seen there. And I've seen that happen, and that's successful to me, where like someone was like, oh, I would love to have this. And so they meet someone at the lane. They would meet somebody at the lanes, and they would go outside of those four walls and make that sort of thing happen based on this like catalytic event that happened there.
Totally.
You know, so for me, the wooden walls is like it's wonderful to see people that are like, I'm not into art being into art. Because like all of a sudden, even if it's ego-based, at least they're engaging in art, which I feel like for a long time, what bummed me out about Asbury is when I would hear these like elevator pitches in real estate ads about how Asbury was such an artistic community. And I think it's a music community. It wasn't an artistic community. So it's like, now I've been like, we need an artistic community. If we're going to say we're an artistic community, and I just want people to be honest, like make it a community, you know, like how can we afford to have artists live here?
Right.
How can we bring artists in from other cities and states and countries to work here?
Totally.
How can we do that? Because it, all of those things will change our landscape.
Right.
Because if they all leave and all the art leaves, it will change our landscape. So look at it as reverse engineering, like what we've gained from it and what more we could gain from
it. Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of town hack, right? Is like,
I like that town hack.
When it's like everything becomes not affordable and creative people go elsewhere, like, how do you stop that, you know?
It is like this horrible sort of like cycle. Mm-hmm. And like we were talking about Henry Vaccaro, it's like everybody plays a role in that cycle. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to think my role has already been played. So I think the trick is how do you sort of keep in that circle and continually like inspire something new?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But like, the thing that makes me sad is like, I don't know, never go on social media and listen to people talk about affordable housing in Asbury Park because it's like terrifying. And, and so one day I did, and I went in this hole and I started doing 6 degrees of separation of all the people I know that couldn't afford to live here now.
Right.
And what their efforts had brought to the table, whether it was Jason Thompson, who writes for the Tri-City and has High Voltage, like that's all gone. You know, if it's like Pork Chop couldn't afford to live here, forget about 22 murals. If, you know, I couldn't live here, like, you know, what I brought to the table. So I started doing this, like, as, like, a test to say, like, well, this is why affordable housing is important. Because people like to say, like, well, why should you be entitled to waterfront property? Mm. Why should I not be entitled to waterfront property? Right. So it is weird to develop in a town where people continually, like, they always say to me, well, you guys should move to Neptune. I'm like, no, I shouldn't. I should be able to live where I work. And absolutely. I'm passionate about, and like for you as a real estate person to say that, that bums me out.
Right.
Because that's not true.
Right. That's true. You know?
And so I think it's like, if we want to be a colorful community, we need, like, I miss all the weirdos I met 15 years ago. Like, there's a guy out there in the world that used to, you said his name the other day. What is it? Tits McGee.
There really is a Tits McGee.
Yeah.
I don't know who named him that, but I, like, people would tell me these, like,
I don't know if that's his real name. I don't think that's the name his mom gave him.
I don't think that's the name. But he's like this. I met him and I said to Porkchop when I first moved here, I'm like, I saw a guy today on Lake Avenue and he had boobs.
Right.
But he was a construction worker as a guy, you know, and I think that's amazing that, like, he felt comfortable to live in Asbury because he felt like he needed to. I mean, he's married and, you know, all that stuff, but he wanted fake boobs.
Right.
So, like, that's great. Like, I miss those sort of colorful characters. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I want diversity.
Right.
Like, I want the, you know, the high end, the low. I want all of it.
Right.
But, like, it seems we're in this trajectory right now that needs to be sort of, like, balanced out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
For me, anyway.
That's cool.
If it's my world.
So, tell me a little bit about, is it Hot Tea, the new piece?
Yes,
so that one obviously is another piece in the casino building. Mm-hmm. It's gotten a lot of attention. And how did you find, like, how do you find people that you're bringing in from, like, the outside world? What's your?
I think a lot of times it's like what do they call it? FOMO, like fear of missing out.
Right.
Yeah, fear of missing out. Like, so a lot of times I can't leave to go to other projects all around the world.
Yep.
So I'm on the internet a lot looking at, like, what happened at this art festival.
Gotcha.
And so I found his work 5 years ago. Mm. I reached out to him when we first started the Wooden Walls to do this in the casino.
Right.
At the time, my budget was $5,000, and that was huge. And I was very proud, and I was like, I have this money for you, and I love your work, and I think it would be great. I don't know, as an artist, where else you're going to be able to create right next to the ocean in an abandoned building. Like, Venice Beach doesn't have that. Like, I don't know where you could go to find
that's
that.
That's true.
Where people will see your work.
Mm.
So I sold it to him. He thought it was great. However, just the way the world works, someone else found him, thought he was great too.
Mm.
It was Fish. Fish takes him to Mexico every year to do installations. The band Bon Iver, like, had him come up to Seattle and do a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Sesame Street. When I found him, so did other people.
Right.
That's just the, you know, collective consciousness of the world. So
right.
He was very polite, was like, I have this thing. I'll let you know if I have free time for 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so persistence. Every year I would say, I still have this budget of $5,000, and I would hold it for him. And the developers, the Madison Marquette funds it for us, and they were like, is this guy ever coming? And I'm like, yes, he is. And
right.
So I think last year they were like, Jen, they're, you know, if you and Porkchop and work in the carousel, that $5,000 would probably go better suited in there.
Right.
So the way that the world works.
Carousel is dope, by the way.
Oh, thank you. He was this artist, Eric Hottie, did the installation at the entrance of our art fair in Miami. So I was like, yes, Eric's here. I'm going to DM him on Instagram and say, come meet me. And so we've been back and forth with each other for 5 years straight.
Right.
So I said to him, can we please come this year? And he's like, I might have some free time. And I was like, I still have $5,000 for you. And he's like, oh, Jen, that's so sweet, but I get a lot more now. And I was like, but you said. Yeah. So he made a deal with me. He's pretty cool. He was like, if I come to fly me to Asbury, if I find inspiration, I'll do it for $5,000,
that's
like
cool.
As a gift, right. You know, like that'll be my time and supplies. So I said, right. Cool. Flew him here, walked him through the Paramount, walked him through Convention Hall, walked him through the Carousel, walked him to the casino. And I didn't know this at the time, but I told him the story about the dancers that had died in the fire at the Paramount.
Oh, really?
And he was fascinated. What do you mean? And I was like, well, there's these, you know, the Paramount was a theater, and, you know, there's a lot of tragedy that happened surrounding this theater and this complex. And I told him about the Morrow Castle and about the bodies and all this stuff. So I took him to the dressing room where the girls died. Oh, wow. And he was just sat there in silence. He's like, okay. And then he was just like kind of quiet the rest of the day. And I was like, ugh, this is not going right. Damn it. I didn't show him the right things.
I bummed him out. I didn't inspire
him. I totally bummed him out. Right. Now he wants to go back to Milwaukee. Right. But then we went to the casino and he sat there for like, I would say it was like 2 hours, wow. Just like watching people and the building and looking around and stuff. And then he was just like, okay, I'll do it. And I'm right. like, oh, you like it? He's like, yeah, this is great. I mean, you're right. Like, can I do anything I want? And right. I said, yeah, you can do anything you want. Like, of course.
Right.
I'm like, for $5,000.
Right.
And he's like, well, we should do a permanent one. Can you raise $75,000? And I was like, oh, I haven't yet, but right. I could try. And he's like, okay, well, let's just do this temporary one. It's going to be out of yarn, so it'll cost less, and you know, so on and so forth. But what really sold him, I think, was a pinball arcade. He loved the pinball arcade.
Oh, really?
Which I feel like back in the day, the lane sold the town on certain people. Mm-hmm. Now it's the pinball
That's
arcade
funny.
For sure.
Right?
Because every artist that comes in is like, oh my god, that pinball arcade's so great.
That's cool.
So he did 5 weeks of prep.
Right.
He came and installed in a week. He worked like 16 hours a day. He's unlike any artist I met. He's so driven. Like, he didn't even want to talk, really. I like right. Poor Chubb and I would check on him and stuff. Like, you need food? You need this? He's like, no, I'm good. So it's like, wow. He knew that I didn't realize how massive it would be. So I guess he knew in his head. Like, he brought his boyfriend. They worked every day. And his boyfriend's like, oh, this is great, but
right.
Can we have some fruit? Yeah. Like, so... What I didn't know until he got interviewed by someone is that the dancer story inspired him
That's
to
cool.
do it. And
right.
it's called One Last Moment Under the Sky.
Right.
And it's the idea that you never know when it'll be your last moment. So you should try to take a moment
right.
when you can to acknowledge when something's beautiful and stuff. So it's 5,670 strings.
Wow.
It's 36 colors. It's 20 feet wide by 100 feet long. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to represent the sun, all the colors from sunrise to sunset in
right.
a day, with the sea and the land in wow. the middle.
That's cool.
It's wild.
That's really cool. I mean, I love that thought.
It's morbid but beautiful.
Right.
But it's also cool because he's like, I also want, my installations are for people to look up.
Right.
Like, no one looks up anymore. And I was like, oh, that's so true.
Yeah.
Because of our phones and, you know, being focused, and especially here, people have been in that building so many times that they don't think about it.
Right.
And I think one of the successful parts of this project is, like, we kind of, like, low-key just had it happen. Mm-hmm. So people would just discover it on their own.
Right.
Because I feel like now, you don't, nothing's secret anymore. Like, there's nothing.
No, that's true.
Everything is curated, and I'm going to tell you what to think and where to go and where to eat. So
right.
I think to stumble upon that must be wild for people that don't Yep. go to see installation art.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I take people there all the time.
Do you?
Check stuff out. Yeah,
it's a cool. different animal all the time.
Right.
And it's like, it feels living like that, like a character. Like,
right.
we went up to undo a knot the other day, and it was just right. like, oh my God, how did this happen?
Right.
How did you get yourself all messed up?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like, and you realize the wind, it's the physical representation of the wind.
Right.
So somehow the wind attached to something, and all of a sudden there's 40 strands and a big
right.
dreadlock.
It's got a dread, right, totally.
Yeah.
And it's, like, different every day, right? Because it's, like, some days not windy, some days yeah. a little windy, some days, you know.
The best moment I've had with it so far is we went up there after a rainstorm, like a really bad rainstorm, mm. and all the moisture got sucked up into the yarn
right.
somehow, and it felt like you were in a cave because there was fog,
wow.
and then the lighting created that sense of fog so you could it was weird. It was just like you felt like you were in a cave because the water, the yarn became so saturated with moisture, it dripped onto the puddles.
That's crazy.
So it was making noise then. And I was like, I'm looking around. I'm like, there's no one here.
It was wild.
It was me, Porkchop, and this girl that we brought from Japan to work here. And I don't know. She didn't speak English. So I was trying to like articulate how excited I was. And we were like communicating via Google Translate. Like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And then showing it to each other. Yeah. And I was like, does she get what this is? It was really wild.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. So tell me real quick, where are you going from here?
Oh, God.
And I don't mean today. Like
I'm going to go to Starbucks and I'm going to have a coffee.
Porkchop, where do you see your future going? Any like big goals or anything?
I guess I got some murals to do still.
Right.
I'm going to paint on every building in Asbury Park if I can.
Right.
I had an opportunity. I'm going to be doing a museum show in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Wow.
In 2 years.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that's what my next 2 years is going to look
like. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Right. Very cool. What are you taking there?
I have to make like 30 something pieces and half of them are the full size sculptures.
Wow.
Yeah.
So like, great. This is a perfect example why we need studio space and like, you know, Porkchop can go out in the world and be like, I'm from Asbury Park. So all of a sudden it's like, you know, how we talk about our musicians that are so important to Asbury Park. Like, you know, Duke Ellington washed dishes here.
Right.
Like that Porkchop painted buildings. And but that's the challenge is like,
cool.
I think that, you know, everybody has to make a concerted effort. Like, if we want to be really known as, like, a creative town, that means making, aligning ourselves with development that sort of reflects that.
Yeah, I agree. Now, Jen, I know you're going to do a podcast called 21 Questions.
I am
going
to do a podcast. I'll have you on my show, Evan.
Thank you. Let's do a quick preview.
Okay. So how did you get...
No, not for me. Not for me. How about, are there... Let's try three.
Okay.
Instead of 21, but are there three things you've always wanted that you don't know about Porkchop? You got three questions for him.
If I have three questions for Porkchop that I don't know about, that's a hard one. Is there three questions
I
don't
know?
I
pretty much know.
I'm like,
you
know, he's like my, like, Jen, why do you need to know this?
Yeah, we've known each other for a long time and she asks an enormous amount of questions. So I don't think there's probably.
What was the first time? Do you remember losing your first tooth?
No. Next question.
See? What was the first girl you've ever asked to a dance?
Dance. I don't know. I have no recollection.
Here, this is a good question. And he already answered it, so I'm cheating a little bit. If you could work with any artist, living or dead, who would it be?
What did I say? Egon Schiele?
Yeah. I think you first just said no one. I was like, come on. Because I'm constantly asking questions, so it gets a little, I'm sure, like, unnerving. Like, really? That's the question today? I don't want to talk about anything, you know. But, yeah, that's going to be. How did you get into, I'll ask you.
Okay.
Did you want to be a musician?
Probably. But I think I found out early on. I think I like always listened to music as a kid. Like I have very vivid memories of being a kid with a record player on an extension cord.
Oh, nice.
Like outside while I ran around. It's like playing records. Yeah. And
that's
like
awesome.
The record warping in the sun.
Yeah, totally.
And then I think I figured out like I never would be a musician because I didn't play very well.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
like
practice.
Me as an artist. Yeah.
But, I remember reading those ads in the back of Rolling Stone. It was like, who keeps the lights on Van Halen? It could be you, you know? And I was like, oh my God. Like, that's how.
Because you
do
entertainment law, right?
Right.
Where were you when I needed you at the lanes?
I was watching Collapsing Lungs fight on 10 people.
I always make a joke and I said, you know, after being at the lanes for 11 years, I was like, it's no big deal. If I get in trouble, I'll have a lawyer.
Right.
No. I realize now that, like, it would be easier for me to get a criminal to burn down the lanes than protect it. That's what I figured out in 11 years, but yeah.
Right, totally. But I, in the last, like, 2 years, I took some lessons over at Lake House.
Oh, good.
So I got in a band. I played bass. I actually played a gig at the Lanes.
Nice.
Which,
the new one?
Yeah, the new one.
Yeah.
So to me, it was like, mentally, I was like, saying in my mind, like, I'm playing the Lanes, that's so dope, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is a different experience. But so I played a couple shows, so something I never thought I'd do, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah, cool.
That's
awesome.
Rad. Yeah. What was the best thing about the new Lanes and the worst thing?
Best thing, I think, is just,
I haven't been there yet. So
yeah.
I don't know.
The I mean, to me, like I love the exterior, and just seeing it makes me feel good. And they planted a couple Airstreams in the back, which I want an Airstream.
So. I have to tell you, that was pretty amazing. Like right. I was like, wow, that was a good choice.
Yeah, that was kind of
for
cool.
The dressing rooms, right?
Right.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty rad because we good, literally yeah. put people on bowling lanes in the green room.
That's awesome. To me, like, the idea of, like, a bowling alley and a music venue, like, it's just so awesome, right?
Right.
I know some dudes. I haven't seen a band there, but, like, the Seagirt bowling alley, like, I know
a do they
of,
do shows there?
Yeah. Like,
I was always hoping it would,
there.
Like, be a thing.
Right.
Like, so ever, people told me, like, if you were a businesswoman, you would have done this whole thing and just done it like in chain. All these little right. towns all over the world. And I was like, well.
All these sleepy, forgotten bowling alleys that could have yeah. been scooped up.
I could have saved the bowling industry.
Right. Totally.
See, I miss my calling.
Totally.
Yeah.
I always wanted to combine a restaurant and a car wash where, like, you'd have a glass wall in the restaurant and you just watch the cars go through the car wash.
I think they have them.
Do they? Yeah.
So we were playing this game the other day, Things That Don't Exist, right. Technology to Save, and someone's like, well, you should have a strip club and a car wash. I'm like, there's no way. There is.
Right.
There's absolutely. And you can get chicken.
Yeah, nice. There is a strip club.
I'm fascinated by people.
There's like, a strip club recording studio also. We found out we had to hire this dude to like do some music for like this film project we were working on.
Oh, right on.
And he's like, I only work out of this particular studio.
That's awesome.
And it's somewhere, like, I want to say it was like in the Western Jersey, Pennsylvania border somewhere.
That is rad.
So we're like, all right, no problem. And then we find out like this guy booked this, like it's a strip club recording studio. Like,
that is genius.
It was pretty funny. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, like, left to our own devices, there's some really cool things
that's
left
right.
in the world.
Totally. Just shows you, kids, anything's possible.
You can do anything you want.
That's true. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you both coming in.
Thanks for having us. Really it's super cool. fun. I'm glad it finally connected
yep.
and made it happen.
It was
I've
good
seen
to...
your stickers forever. I'm like, what's this hustle thing?
That's cool. So everyone, check out Jen and the Parlor Gallery, parlor-gallery.com, and the Wooden Walls Project, woodenwallsproject.com, on Instagram at Wooden Walls Project. And is there a Parlor Gallery Instagram? I'm
there
sure.
There is. It's just Parlor Gallery.
Parlor Gallery.
Yeah. Pretty
and
inventive there.
At _ Juicy Jen, keeping it real. And, well, the most important questions we never even got to is how you both got your names.
Mm. Oh, you go ahead. Yours is intro. Well,
So I started doing drawings of my brother-in-law as a hillbilly eating a pork chop. And then I started, I was like, oh, maybe I could, you know, I did all these other drawings of like pork chops as like things of temptation, you know?
Right.
With crowns and smiling.
Yeah, that's
and
awesome.
And then a friend of mine, I gave him this little painting of like a devil chick on
right.
a pork chop.
Riding a pork chop.
And we would go out or whatever, and he knew a lot of people in town, and I didn't.
Right.
I was new to the area. And he's like, oh, this is my boy Pork Chop. And I was like, what? You know, and then that was it. And
it just
everybody
stuck.
Just called me Pork Chop.
That's cool.
And my boring name came from a dear friend of mine. I was nannying for her in Long Beach Island, and her adorable son would like, she's really like a hard body.
Right.
And he would touch me and he'd be like, why are you so squishy? And I was like, oh, Isaiah, I'm squishy, I know. And then we would joke about the idea that I was squishy, and we would sit and like we would have like a dumb, like we would eat cherries and have like a cherry spitting contest,
right.
like pit contest. And in his little 4-year-old brain, he started calling me Juicy Jen, and
no
I was like,
way.
Stop, quit it. And then his mom loved it. She
right.
loved it. So she encourages, like, oh, you know, I would pick him up from school. So
right.
she'd be like, hey, Mrs. Johnson, Juicy Jen's going to pick up Isaiah. And I'm like, so when we moved here, I'm like, don't tell people about my nickname. So the first thing she did when we worked on the line is like, oh, did you meet Juicy Jen? I'm like, oh.
No.
But, you know, it's funny. You know, 15 years ago, I used that email.
Right.
And it's so sucky to have to change an email.
Sure.
Now.
Right.
Because I was like, oh, I've got to get a web guy to do it. And then where does all the emails go? That now that I have it, it's like a funny thing because they're like, what is this? It's fine when you have
right.
the lanes where everybody has a moniker. But
right.
now I'm like, when I'm emailing agents for totally. Artists and I'm like,
that's really
hi.
Funny. Like, who is that's the best.
Or like if I have to deal with like sponsors or like corporate people, like
that's even better.
The
yeah.
filters won't let them go through.
Oh,
Juicy
really?
Jen. No.
That's really funny.
So I have to like, so now I'm like, yeah.
Damn it, Smithers is on the porn sites again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when they hear the story, they're like, oh, that's why your name's Juicy Jeff.
Right. That's pretty funny. That's actually the only part I like about my job is when a new potential client has to give you their email address.
Yes.
And there's like that moment of silence, and they're like, fuck, I knew I should have changed that.
That's my whole life, Evan.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's the best.
Yeah. Maybe right. I should just shorten it to JJ.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, JJ's good. Yeah. Double J.
Maybe. Yeah, double J maybe. And they'll be like, what's that? Yeah. That's even weirder maybe. Anyway. Yeah, thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you. Everyone check out Porkchop. You see his artwork all over Asbury and the rest of the world and going to Russia. He's invading Russia in 2 years. Get to work, man. Look for the artofporkchop.com and follow at Porktomic. Once again, I'm Evan Balmer. Follow me on Instagram at Evan Balmer.